sonoro.
This episode is brought to you by Hire Ellas. Ready to bring visibility to your business in your unique voice? Then Hire Ellas. Ellas are Jackie and Anna, creative strategists that provide marketing consultation and creative services to growing businesses and organizations. With over a decade of creative and strategic experience, Hire Ellas can help you figure out what pieces of your business story resonate the most with your customers. Follow them on Instagram at Hire Ellas or reach out to Jackie at jackie@hireellas.com to learn more. Welcome to
Tamarindo Podcast,
hosted by me, Brenda Gonzalez, a fitness coach, political nerd, and nonprofit capacity builder.
And me, Delcy Sandoval, a Guatemalan-American licensed therapist and passionate creativity advocate. Together, we're here to uplift our community through powerful conversations with changemakers, creatives, and healers.
Each week on the pod, we talk politics, culture, and personal development. Listeners call Tamarindo the advocacy and self-love podcast. Vámonos!
Let's start the show.
Hello, hello, Tamarindo listeners. And how are you, Delcy?
Oh, man, I am on cloud nine. What an exciting day, Brenda. ¿Cómo estás tú?
Yes, it is an exciting day. A couple reasons. One, it is our 200th episode. At least that's what iTunes will tell you, that this is our 200th yeah. episode. It is Dolores Huerta's birthday. Yes. And why else is this such a special day?
It is such a special day because we have had the opportunity to speak to a living legend. And this episode just really blew my mind because we were able to get through a lot of history, but most importantly, current and recent activism on part of Dolores Huerta and some really amazing advice for us moving forward as we look to the election.
Yes, so exciting. So y'all, this is a very special episode. We're not going to delay it much longer. You're going to hear from the one and only legendary Dolores Huerta. We're so honored that she took the time to join us. And in the show notes of this episode, we'll also share some links to some of the resources she mentioned and ways that you can get involved with the Dolores Huerta Foundation. So one last question, Delcy. What did you find most inspiring from our chat?
I think what I found really inspiring was that Dolores had this sense that regardless of all of the obstacles that seem to be mounting, that there is a clear path forward that has to do with strategy, advocacy, and allyship. And she made it so clear that it made me feel extremely hopeful, Brenda, extremely hopeful. ¿Y tú?
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Because if Dolores Huerta is continuing on this fight, well into her 94th birthday, all of us can lift a little bit more and do a little bit more to get involved. All right, let's hear from Dolores now. On behalf of Tamarindo, welcome Dolores Huerta to our show. It's such an honor to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here with you.
Yes. Now, today's a very special day for us at Tamarindo and our listeners to hear from you, but it's also your birthday. And as a trailblazing Latina, a labor leader, a lifelong activist, a feminist, what can you tell us about overcoming obstacles in male-dominated spaces?
Well, I know that's always a challenge for women. The main thing that we have to do is keep focused on our purpose, what we're trying to accomplish. And just, make it our mission to say that no one is going to get in our way, that we will find a way to accomplish what we set out to do. And if we do have an obstacle, try to plan. I was going to use the word scheme.
I like scheme.
figure out a way how we're going to go around that obstacle. And even sometimes anticipate that this may be happening. Because we're always going to have obstacles, especially as we're fighting for social justice, as we're fighting for women's rights, LGBTQ rights, immigrant rights. There are people that don't agree with us, and they will do whatever they can to stop us from accomplishing our goals.
Yes, that's very true. So I know you're no stranger to these obstacles. And I want to know, how do you, you know, we need to turn to folks like you that have been in this fight for so long to tell us that are, that also want to be involved. How do we stay focused? How do we stay positive when it does, when it can feel like there's so much opposition? What are the ways that you stay inspired and that you stay focused?
Well, the first thing that we have to do is try to find allies, try to make a plan about how, you know, how are we going to go about accomplishing this goal? And we have to think of people out there that kind of think the same way that we do, that have the same purpose in life. And how can we call on them actually to assist us? And so, you know, before we take that first step, make a plan of action. Okay, what is the first thing that we have to do, that I have to do to accomplish and to meet my goal that I'm setting up for myself and for others? And if we can, and then also have maybe an alternative plan. And the first plan, this first plan doesn't seem to work out, and people that I was counting on are not going to be there to be able to help me, then I've got to think of some alternative, maybe other people that I have to go to. But I'll always think strategically in terms of what is it that we need to do? Who do I have to talk to? Who do I have to get involved in my plan to make sure that this works? And sometimes we have to also expect disappointments. Sometimes the people that we are depending on, even sometimes they maybe are good friends, and we think that they're going to be there for us or not. And maybe they have other ideas, or maybe they have other efforts that they're working on, so they don't have time for us. But the thing is that we never give up. That's the main thing. We can accomplish our goals if we never give up. Because once we give up, once we quit, we lose.
Yeah, that's such an important point. Yeah, once we quit, we lose. So we can't let ourselves be discouraged. And I love what you said about we have to just expect that disappointment. You know, this thing, if it were easy, we would have already accomplished all the things that we want. We would have had inclusion for everybody. We would have immigration reform. We would have all the things that we fight for. So I think that's a really great way to let us stay grounded, is to maybe find some calm in having a plan and also expect that disappointment, but never give up hope. I love that. Now, a little bit of background about this podcast. It actually started in 2016, and it was in response to the then candidate Trump and the way that he was being so vile in his language and then later treatment of our community. And here we are, it's 2024. It feels like we're up against the same thing. What can we be doing right now to energize our community for this election?
I love that question, because not only do we have a great opportunity for growth, you know, during campaign season, a lot of things, kind of miracles happen during campaign season. So we actually have the opportunity to grow our own organization or our own campaign by reaching out to other people and making them having them get involved in the campaigns also. So keep that in mind. We know that we can never do the job by ourselves. The only way we could accomplish this is by reaching out to others and have them join us. And it's a perfect opportunity. And you know, the job is so simple, okay? The job is so simple. We just gotta get out there, knock on doors, talk to people, recruit people, make them understand that registering to vote is important. You know, talking to people that you know to get them to vote. And this is the way that we can actually win. The sad equation that we have right now is that so many people are not voting. And especially our Latino community. Our Latino community is very disengaged at this moment in time.
So what messaging is going to inspire them to get connected?
The main thing that they have to understand is that the people that we elect are the ones that are going to make the policies and the laws that are going to govern our lives. These are the people that are going to give us the resources that we need in our community for schools, you know, for our education, for food, for benefits. They are the ones that are going to determine Which money comes, would it be from the city, from the state, from the county, or from the federal government? And the only way that we can access any of these resources is we have to have people in place, people in power that have the information and that they understand and they know that they know the avenues of where of these resources can come to our community. And so we don't have friends and allies in those positions that can help us. Well, we know that the haters, people that hate immigrants, people that hate Latinos, people that hate women, you know, they're not going to be our friends. And so why would we want them to take these positions on school boards, city councils, commissioners or supervisors, state assembly or Congress? Why would we want those people there when we know we have the power to get good people, progressive people, people that care about our community? We have the power to get them elected. But if we don't, then the haters are the ones that are going to win.
Yeah, we can't let the haters win. I'm going to pass it out to Delcy, who's going to ask you a little bit more about the Dolores Huerta Foundation.
I'll start off with introducing myself, Dolores. I want to say, you know, such an honor to have you here. Thank you for sharing space with us. This is a big deal for Brenda and I, and I'm sure for everybody listening. I just want to say hi, welcome. My name is Delcy, and I just recently became co-host of this show, and it's so exciting that like my first couple of months that you're here. Thank you for joining us. You know, one thing that you said earlier that really strikes me is that you can't give up. You have to keep pushing. And as you've continued your activism, could you share with us some of the recent initiatives that the Dolores Huerta Foundation has undertaken with our community?
Well, we have done just a magnificent job, I'm going to say. I'm going to kind of dial back just a little bit. You know, during the pandemic, we had the census, but we had to try to get people to get out there and to register for the census. And we know that Trump was saying to undocumented people that they couldn't register for the census, trying to scare our community. Well, we actually got 94,000 people signed up for the census. And a minute ago, I was talking about resources. Well, the way that how much money is going to go into a particular community is gauged on how many people live in that community. And the only way that we can know that is by the census. That's the only way. And then what we did is we went on to do the redistricting. We hired our own demographer, and we went to these voting districts, you know, and we were able to create an additional Senate seat for the Central Valley of California. And this is what we had to do. And now as a result of that, in Bakersfield, California, we have the first Punjabi Sikh woman that has been elected to the city council. But we were able to do that by making sure that the Punjabi community, that they actually had an opportunity to elect one of their own. So this is really important. We have actually been instrumental on vaccinating 12,000 people against COVID. Yeah, and then our youth group, we have a big youth group, a big education group, and we are out there advocating to change some of the laws. We were very successful in getting a law passed here in California. And we already had this law in the elementary and middle school, but for the high school level, that when a student gets suspended, that they can't put that person out on the street. They have to keep them on the campus. And it took a while to get that passed, but we did. And now we're working on trying to get more police off of the school grounds and using that money that they use for police to use that more for counselors and for programs that students need. So, and then of course, during the primary campaign here in California, we had literally all of our 51 full-time staff workers that we have on staff, plus 67 canvassers that were actually going out there door to door, getting people out to vote. And for the general election, well, we're going to triple those numbers because we are working And we're working in four different counties. We're working in Kern County, Tulare County, Fresno County, and part of Los Angeles County up in the Antelope Valley.
Yeah, I'd love to speak more about that, Dolores. You know, given the political landscape that you've outlined here today, what would you say is the most effective strategy that the Dolores Huerta Foundation utilizes to defend our democracy today?
Well, making sure that people are informed and that we can get them out to vote and really make them understand, because a lot of people, they don't even understand how government works. You know, when I was in elementary school 70 some years ago, you know, they taught that in elementary schools. Civics was taught in elementary schools. I don't think it is anymore. So you have people graduating from college that have no idea how our government works, how advocacy works, how laws are passed. You know? And this is something that we have to come back to teaching democracy. And this is how civic works. And so this is what we have to do on a very personal basis by setting up our neighborhood committees and explain to people, this is the way government works. And this is why this is so important for you to vote.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because there's something really important that happens when you provide education, which is this sense of empowerment, right? Let's talk a little more about that. How do you think, Dolores, that we can effectively empower Latino workers to understand their personal and their collective power?
And I love what you said, because I also think it's about also their rights that they have. I'll give you a couple of examples, and you can nod your heads and you can tell me whether you did know this or not. So many undocumented workers, and we have many undocumented people that work in different jobs, in farm work, and they work in hotels, they work in construction. Many undocumented workers do not know that they are covered by California and the United States minimum wage laws. They do not know that in California, they are covered under our workers' compensation laws. If a person gets hurt on the job and they're undocumented, oftentimes they're afraid to go to report their injury. But you know what? In California, they're covered. In California, if they get hurt on the job, the company has to pay for their medical bills. And it also has to pay them for the time off where they're disabled and they can't work. But oftentimes they don't know that. And so they don't report their injuries. And this is really sad. So it's a matter of getting out this information so people can understand that they do have these rights.
I'd love to expand further on that. Talking about workers' rights, there seem to be a lot of strikes happening across industries, especially post-COVID. And there has been some progress, but what would you say the challenges are for the labor movements today, and how would we navigate these complexities?
Unfortunately, the laws that are right now, there's kind of stacked against labor unions. And many of the economic sanctions or economic tools that labor had back in the past have been taken away from them, you know, like secondary strikes, boycotts, et cetera. So working people really have to work very, very hard to get the kind of representation that they need. Even boycotting, you know, like in the farm workers union, we use boycotts to be able to get the growers to come to the bargaining table to sign contracts for the workers that gave them, you know, better benefits and better wages. But some of those economic tools have been taken away. So the main thing that workers have right now is to just stand together, work together, and keep that unity and patience. Because even if an employer takes a long time to sit down at the table, you know, but people can do work stoppages, which are legal to do, you know, and they can do these either a strike, which is of course very hard on workers, because that means that they're not earning any money. But and even though you can't do, we can't do a boycott, say, of Lucky stores like we used to do, or a boycott of Albertsons, you know, a grocery store, but you can let people know. We call it informational. It's not like a boycott, but you can say, did you know, tell people in the neighborhood, did you know that this store here or this company here is refusing to bargain with their workers? I'll give you a good example right now, Starbucks. You know, workers at Starbucks have organized, and yet Starbucks has not yet sat down with their workers to get them a contract. Amazon is another one. These huge, huge companies that have so much money are refusing to sit down and bargain with their workers. I would say to people, you know, don't buy your coffee at Starbucks until people sit down and until Starbucks sits down. And the same thing with Amazon. You know, go to some other platform to buy your products online and just skip Amazon until they sit down and bargain with their workers. And, you know, when you think about this, women, you know, we as women have so much purchasing power, and Latinos have a lot of purchasing power. You know, our purchasing power, I think, is in $1 trillion. You know, we don't realize that that's economic power that we have, and that we can hold that economic power or divert that economic power. Then that is a way that we can also be very supportive of labor unions.
I love that. I do want to have a follow-up question about that. No, I think that I love that you gave us some really concrete examples of how we could be supportive. I want to know what's at stake this election when it comes to labor movements. Like what are we at risk of? There's as Delcy mentioned, there's been momentum, but what could happen if things don't go our way come November?
Well, we know one thing, that President Biden has been walking the picket line with the auto workers, you know, when they went on strike recently. And again, about who would get elected in California, as many of you may know, that the minimum wage for fast workers now is $20 an hour. And that was done by our legislature in California, that they voted on that, the Democrats mostly. So this is what's at stake.
Thank you, Dolores. You know, listening to you speak is so inspiring to us who have been, I think I speak for all of us when I say we've been kind of bombarded with this idea that sort of there are a lot of challenges that are coming our way. And seeing how long you have supported our community and fought for our community is really inspiring. And in return, we'd love to know, part of our rapid fire section, our rapid fire questions, what inspires you, Dolores? What are you inspired by right now?
I'm inspired by all of the work that needs to be done. I just want to also mention, we were talking about, you know, the difference between Trump and Biden. We know that when Trump first ran, the first thing he did was attack Mexicans. Even though, you know, he had Mexicans and he had undocumented people, Latinos, working on all of his golf courses and building some of the buildings that he owned. But he came out with a racist slur against Latinos from day one. And now he's doing the same thing again. His whole part of his campaign is to attack immigrants, to attack him. And when he's attacking immigrants, he's indirectly attacking Latinos again. So we can see that there's a very, very clear difference between the Biden campaign and the Trump campaign. And we need to let people know this. Because a lot of people, they don't watch MSNBC, they don't watch Rachel Maddow, you know, they don't really, they get their news, we don't from where, but we have to let them know that, you know, I want to mention one other thing. Back in 1986, and I was there working on this measure for several months in Washington, D.C., we got the Amnesty Bill of 1986. There were thousands of people who got the legalization status when we passed that law. Many people think it was Ronald Reagan. It was not Reagan. He signed the law. But the people who pushed that law forward was a congressman from California named Howard Berman from the San Fernando area. There was Mr. Schumer, who is now the head of the Senate of the United States of America. Another congressman named Peter Rodino from New Jersey. You know, they're the ones that pushed this bill through. Senator Kennedy, may he rest in peace. You know, they're the ones that pushed this bill through. And so if we look at our history, we can see that it's always been the Democrats that have been there and that have fought for the Latino community. Last year in California, we finally passed a law that all undocumented people in California have access to health care. Wow, that's a biggie. You know, we're the only state in the union that has that. So we know who our friends are. We have to let people know who these are, our friends, and these are our enemies. And so there's a very clear picture out there so people will understand.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And thank you for sharing that story with us, because to me, I think it means that the inspiration is all the organizers that push those elected officials to make those laws happen. And great callback to that amnesty law, because if it weren't for that, you know, I would not be here because my parents were able to find a path to citizenship through that. Now, thank you
Me
for
too.
That. Yes. So yes, children of the of IRCA is what they people say. So I want to ask you, Dolores, something else that we do on this podcast is we always celebrate something. Of course, we want to first celebrate you. Happy birthday. And what's something else that you want to celebrate? It could be big. It could be small. What is something you're celebrating today?
Well, last week, you know, with Cesar Chavez's birthday, March the 31st, and they had Farm Worker Week. And I think we can always celebrate farm workers that are out there picking our food every day. And we know that they're essential workers. They don't get the benefits and the salaries of other essential workers like policemen and firemen do, right? And they're the ones that feed the firemen, they feed the policemen. And so, you know, we can celebrate, again, Cesar Chavez's legacy. The whole idea is that we can win through nonviolence, that we don't have to use violence to be able to win our struggle. The other thing I do want to mention is that as women, we are fighting for the Equal Rights Amendment for women.
Still.
It passed the Senate, actually, and it's in the House of Representatives right now. And they're trying to get what they call a discharge petition to bring it up for a vote. And so many of the women's organizations, I'm on the board of the Feminist Majority Foundation. You can look it up, Feminist Majority on the web, and also Ms. Magazine, MS period, the magazine that Gloria Steinem started, to get more information on that. So we're asking everybody, contact your congressperson, ask them, have you signed on to the petition to bring the Equal Rights Amendment to the floor of the Congress? This will be the 28th Amendment, everybody, to the Constitution of the United States of America, and we as women will have in writing in the Constitution equal rights as men. Si se puede. We can make
si
it
se puede. Si, si se puede. I love that. And then just one last little question. If you could throw something away in la basura, what are you ready to cancel, leave behind? What do we need to get rid of?
I think a lot of material things that we have. You know, Gandhi said we have to live simply so others can simply live. And we have such a materialistic society, and that people buy and buy and buy, and we create more waste and more waste and more waste. And so I think getting things of things that we don't really need, because we are, you know, we have a very materialistic society that does create a lot of waste. And I think kind of rethinking the way that we live, how can we live more simply? And making sure that we, in our life and in our work, that contribute to making the world a cleaner place, right? And thinking of fighting global warming and climate change and everything that we do.
Thank you. That is such a good message for us to say adios to you. And thank you so much once again for getting us energized, getting us inspired. And again, a very happy birthday to you, Dolores Huerta. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure, Dolores.
And don't forget that we have the power, all right? We have people power. Let's never forget that. We have to go out there and use our people power to make the world a better place. Si se puede.
Gracias. Sí se puede.
Sí se puede.
Gracias, gracias.
Gracias.
Tamarindo Podcast is Brenda Gonzalez and Delcy Sandoval. We are also the show's executive producers. Karina Rivarol of Sonoro Media provides production support. Jeff Ricards wrote our theme song. The best way to support our work is to rate and review Tamarindo Podcast or share an episode with a friend. Get in touch with us at tamarindopodcast.com.
Cuando mi arrendador dijo que el alquiler podría ser más barato si fuéramos amigos con beneficios. Había oído hablar de acoso sexual en el lugar de trabajo, pero en mi casa, eso es discriminación en la vivienda basada en el sexo.
La gente de Bienes Raíces dijo que estaríamos más cómodos viviendo en un vecindario diferente con gente como nosotros. Por suerte, conocíamos nuestros derechos. Es ilegal asustar a los posibles propietarios para que se alejen de ciertos vecindarios en función de raza o nacionalidad.
Si usted cree que sufrió discriminación o tiene preguntas sobre sus derechos, comuníquese con Fair Housing Foundation, Fundación de Vivienda Justa, al 800-446-3247 o también en línea en fhfca.org. La vivienda justa es su derecho. Este es un anuncio de servicio público de Fair Housing Foundation y respaldado por el Departamento de Vivienda y Desarrollo Urbano HUD bajo la subvención de FIPPI, FPEI, 220099.